Thanks, Nolan, for the reminder, because it would have slipped mine too, and I'm responsible for doing it.
You know, we've done.
But this one of two speaking roles, to start recording and stop recording.
We've done, awesome. We've done the 293rd of these, and I'd say there's been about three that we just completely forgot about. And it hurts you because sometimes they're pretty good. And so we like to make them. Now what we do is we record and then we have post-session notes, and we'll send those out beginning of next week. And then we post them on our website, the brownfieldstoolbox.org. It's actually brownfields-toolbox.org. And then we'll put the recording and we'll put the notes on it. But if you are not, and before we just get formally started, if you're not on our contact list, just send me your contact information. It's msenyu@gmail.com. We'll put it in the, Steve, maybe you could put it in the notes real quick. So they'll, in the chat room, so they'll have it. Anyone who's on the call, who may have heard to get on the call and wants to get the notes, we'll include you in the notes. You don't have to worry about putting down any websites or anything today. We'll have all those in the notes, and you'll get notified of the next PLC, which Steve will mention won't be till June because we've got an all grantee coming up mid-month. So we'll go from there. Well, should we get started? And I always like to introduce everyone because we're not a humongous group, but we like to see faces and names for a lot of reasons. One, we'll be having an all grantee meeting, and you might recognize some people right off the bat, kind of an icebreaker. And again, as I was saying before we started, this grant's all about networking. So we like to identify, put names to faces and voices. And so, because one of the reasons is that people who know best about this program are the people who do it. And those are the people we want to learn from and hear from. So, okay, okay. Well, just send me your contact information. We'll make you sure you're in there. Steve, have you got that in the chat box? So,
yep, I put okay. Your email there, Mike.
Go to the chat box and do the email, and just send me your contact information. We'll make sure you're on the list. We'll send you post-session notes beginning of next week, and then we'll send you reminders of the next one, which Steve will mention won't be till June because of the all grantee meeting, but at least you'll be in on the loop. So let's go around the horn and we'll kind of introduce ourselves and put names to faces. Steve, do you want to get started?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name's Steve Fenton. I'm with HMTRA. I work with Mike and Nolan. It's good to see everyone. And look forward to seeing all of you that can make it to the PLC. The all grantee meeting in 2 weeks.
Okay, and I'm Mike Senyu. I'm with also HMTRI, and I'm facilitating the meeting today. Phyllis.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Phyllis Gross. I work for the Full Employment Council. I work in the planning, compliance, and partnerships department. I've been with FEC for 9 years, and I'm actually going to be attending the meeting in Virginia, so I'm really excited.
Fantastic.
I saw you. Yeah, Phyllis, I saw your registration come in last week. Glad to see it.
Yeah, thank you.
Looking forward to seeing you guys.
Me too.
Dina.
Is it Diana?
Diana, I've butchered that name about three times already.
That's all right. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Diana Napier with the Workplace. We are a workforce development board here in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and I oversee our American Job Center, including this grant in environmental works. And yeah, I look forward just to meeting you all who will be there in Virginia in a couple weeks.
Great. Ron.
I'm Ronald Harvey. I'm with the Micro Enterprise Development Center. We're subcontracted with Civic Works through Eli Allen. We do the job readiness training.
Thank you. Nolan.
I'm Nolan Curtis. I work with Mike and Steve, and because you'll be hearing way too much of me at the conference, I'm going to take a non-speaking role this week.
No fair. Deb.
Hi, everyone. My name's Deb Oliver. I am a new program manager with the Career Connect. I work with Diana. So just kind of getting on board and feeling everything out. It's a new position, so I'm just trying to feel my way around and, you know, meet people that are doing some
welcome,
of the same things.
Welcome to the club. We're one great big club. Happy family.
Thank you.
And
thank
I'm
you.
About to butcher this name. Sydney? How do I? Okay, I'm way off.
So it's Sydney like Australia and Phoenix like Arizona.
Sydney. Okay. Well, that's
good afternoon. I'm Sydney Phoenix. I'm with the Center for Family Services with Workforce Development. And we are in New Jersey. We are a service provider. We offer a full range of services throughout the state of New Jersey.
Thank you, Sydney. David.
Good afternoon. I'm David Jones with the CDC of Tampa. I serve as Director of Workforce Development. Again, I'll be attending and just happy to meet you all and make new friends.
Awesome. Willie.
Hi. My name is Willie Lake. I'm the mayor of York, Alabama, first time mayor, and looking forward to seeing everybody in a couple of weeks.
Great.
And Mike, before you go on, Willie, thank you for registering. I actually had your first one, but didn't see it. So when I reached out to you, you registered again right away. Appreciate it, but you're all squared away. So thank you.
Thank you.
David.
Good afternoon. My name is David Cantu. I'm with the City of San Elizario. I'm also with the Rio Grande Council of Governments, and I'm here to learn as much as I can so we can start getting ready for possibly applying at the next round.
There we go. And get your name on the PLC list and make sure you get notes, and we'll be following up through the announcement and all the way till the grant is due. Gary, Mr. Dunbar.
Hi, Jerry.
Jerry, oh boy, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. I'm the administrator for Future Build, which is in the city of Pittsburgh, California, and we're a current grantee and looking forward to reapplying.
Great. And they're a fantastic grantee, have been around for a long time. So welcome.
Excuse me, Mike. Jerry, do we have your email address?
You must, because I get all your notices.
Okay, good. Okay.
Eli.
Hi, I'm Eli Allen with CivicWorks in Baltimore. I oversee our workforce development programs, and we're a current grantee.
Eli's going to be telling us all about his program, which is fantastic. So we're looking forward to that. Lois.
Hi, I'm Lois Ellis, Canton, Ohio. Just looking forward to meeting everyone in a couple of weeks and still in the process of learning.
Good. Erwin.
Hi, it's Erin. I'm Erin Fernandez. I am out of Denver with Groundwork Denver. I serve as our Green Pathways Project Manager, which includes leading our Green Infrastructure Certification Program for young adults. So my focus area is that young adult leadership and workforce development.
Great. And Nancy?
Hi, I'm Nancy Shannon. I'm a Brownfield Project Officer for EPA Region 3. I manage some job training grants, and both myself and the other job training coordinator, Gianna Rosati, will both be at the all grantee meeting at the end of the month.
Oh, great. Awesome. And Shantae. Shantae Vinson. Okay, well. She comes on, she could introduce herself. Did I miss anyone? Okay. Well, thanks everybody for introducing yourselves. I apologize for butchering names. I'm not too good at that. Well, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Steve, and he'll update us on what's happening both with the grantees and what's happening in Washington.
All right. Thanks, Mike, and good to see everyone. I'm looking forward to seeing whoever's coming to the conference in a couple of weeks. That'll be fantastic. Speaking of which, let me lead off with that. The 2023 All Grantee meeting will be 2 weeks from today, will be the start. It'll be Wednesday and Thursday, 24th and 25th at the Hilton Alexandria Old Town in Alexandria, Virginia. We're completely full. The hotel is full. Our room block is full. We have a critical mass with registrations. I will say this. If you would like to come and you can pay for your transportation and lodging, send me an email and let me know, because we still might be able to get a few people in if you can absorb those costs. Our hotel block sold out really quickly, and the whole hotel did as well. But we're looking forward to a really fantastic conference. Those of you that have registered, you'll be getting an email from me with the agenda shortly. So stay tuned for that. And if you have any questions, please let me know. Because of the All Grantee meeting in 2 weeks, the next PLC won't occur until June 7th. We're going to take a little bit of a spring break because of the PLC. So we'll meet again on June 7th. So we're looking forward to seeing everyone, hopefully, on the 24th and 25th. Just looking at your names, I know some of you, several of you have registered for the conference, so it's really looking forward to seeing you. Other news, registration is now open for the Brownfields 2023. That's the national conference in Detroit, Michigan. It'll be August 8th through the 11th. And they'll have, if you've not been to one, they have a lot of information, a lot of things going on. They're going to have over 180 educational sessions. They've got mobile workshops, inspirational speakers, all kinds of events. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting out in the field, there's really something for everyone. In addition to the incredible learning opportunities, conference also offers unparalleled networking opportunities with other like-minded professionals. It's amazing how many people you run into there. So, please consider going there if it's something that you would like to do. We encourage it. You can even apply for a travel scholarship. These applications are open now through the ICMA, and they're accepting applications, travel applications. And those travel scholarships are designed for community groups, nonprofits, environmental justice groups, or other organizations that may be running on tight budgets and would greatly benefit from sending a representative to the National Brownfields Training Conference. A travel scholarship for Brownfield 2023 includes complimentary registration and housing for 4 nights, checking in Monday, August 7th, and checking out Friday, the 11th. And the travel scholarships do not include airfare, meals or incidentals or other costs. And there's a limited number of them, and the deadline to apply is May 17th. So keep that in mind. If this is something that you're interested in, you're probably going to want to apply sooner rather than later on that. And I noticed in the chat box that Nancy mentioned that Gianna Rossetti from EPA Region 3 will be hosting a job training panel at the 2023 conference, along with the Auberly Foundation from Pennsylvania, and also Land Force. And those are two fantastic organizations that we work with. So I'll have to put that session on my own schedule because I plan to be there also. They also have a Brownfields 2023 poster gallery, and call for posters is open. The deadline's May 26th. The poster gallery offers a venue to visually depict innovative practices, brownfield assessment, cleanup, redevelopment, share brownfield success stories, and present research findings. Information on how to submit your ideas will be included in the notes. And then lastly, we, HMTRI, will have a booth there. Actually, I can give you the booth number. It's 113. So we'll be there for the conference. And what we like to do is market your programs. So if you have, information about your programs, flyers or something, and you're not able to come, but you'd like us to market them, let me know. We'd be happy to take them for you. And if you're coming, feel free to bring some brochures and we'll set them out on the table and help market. Plus, it's a good, our booth is a good place for you to kind of use as a networking or home base to meet potential employers and display materials and just network. So usually whenever we have one of these, we have grantees show up and again, they're networking and kind of using us as kind of a home base. So contact me if you have any questions or need additional information on that. We look forward to it. Okay, there's a few questions that have come up I'd like to answer here. One question that came up was, what is the average number of individuals that are recruited during a training cycle? And the response really is the average number of trained participants can vary among job training grantees, and it really depends on a number of factors, such as where the training program is located. Is it a rural area? Is it an urban area? What's the expected retention rates, the comprehensiveness of the curriculum, the number of certifications to be earned, the varying costs of the program? So EPA, of course, encourages applicants to train in place as many people as possible. There's no maximum number or minimum number, but around, a lot of the training cohorts seem to average, around 20 or so. Another question is, can a grant recipient provide training to individuals under the age of 18? Good question. The job training graduates must be 18 years old at the time of graduation in order to be placed in a brownfield related job, as the Fair Labor Standards Act prohibits youth under the age of 18 from being employed in hazardous occupations. So kind of keep that in mind. And if you got questions on that, I would look to your EPA job training coordinator. Another question is, can a grant recipient provide training to individuals who are not currently legal residents of the United States? Another good question, one that's coming up. And the cost for training individuals who are not citizens of the United States and territories of the US and possessions or lawfully admitted to the US for permanent residency are considered unallowable costs per 40 CFR 45.135A as of now. So another thing to keep in mind and to research going forward if you run into that situation. Well, those are just a few of the questions that have come up. And that's all I have. Any questions on anything? If not, I'll turn it over to Mike.
Great. We'll be talking about recruitment a little later in the program, but before that, we're going to hear from a really great grant who has been in the program since 2009. They've had a total of 8 re-ups. These are 8 times in this competition. They started in 2009, went through 11, 14, 16, 18, when we had 2-year grants. 2022, they really didn't miss a beat. And then, of course, in the FY23, they got a $500,000 grant. So this grantee is serving the city of Baltimore. It's part of a much larger program. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to Eli, who will describe the program and what they're doing and how they do it so well. So Eli, take it over.
Sounds good. Thanks. Is it okay if I share my screen and go through a couple slides?
Sure.
All right.
I'll make you co-host.
Okay.
Hold on just a second. Okay. Should be okay now.
I'm good now. Let's see. Thank you for the introduction and also sharing our work with the EPA Brownfield Job Training Program actually goes back all the way to I'm going to try to go to presenter mode. Let me stop sharing for a moment. I was going to say goes back to 2001, and it is incredible. It's been an incredible program that got us started in workforce development from the beginning, and over the years been able to expand both the Brownfield Job Training Program and build out other kind of green construction focused trainings as well. And so we also not talk about today, but we also have a solar installation training as well. That was kind of an outgrowth of the foundation we were able to build with the Brownfield job training. Okay. And try that again. All right. Can everyone see the slide?
Yes.
Perfect. Yes. So we are, yeah, Civic Works and our kind of workforce development, green construction work is under our Center for Sustainable Careers Department. We're based in Baltimore City with a focus of expanding access to family-sustaining careers for Baltimore residents facing systemic inequity. We support Baltimore residents in building the skills needed to secure quality employment, and employers are investing in their workers, advancing equity across their practices. And so our goal is to build kind of long lasting, high quality career pathways for Baltimore residents. And with kind of an equity at the core of our mission, recognizing the work we do with residents to qualify for and be prepared for these careers, and the work we want to do with employers as well around strengthening their workplace practices and becoming employers where all of our graduates can thrive and succeed and build long-lasting careers. And so with our focus on Baltimore, you know, we recognize, like many cities across the country, you know, previously had an economy very focused on manufacturing, and then have had many decades of deindustrialization as that kind of manufacturing base has shrunk. And that's led to over 1,000 brownfield sites across the city, covering over 2,500 acres of land, over 330,000 vacant properties across the city, recognizing that really almost any redevelopment or development project in the city is going to have some sort of brownfields remediation component, and our graduates going to have a potential role on those projects. Many, about 40% of brownfield sites are in Baltimore's Black Enterprise Zone. You know, we also recognize that across the city, racial disparities kind of are stark parts of kind of the economic system we're working within. Median household income for Black residents being less than half of that for white residents, and also Black residents being three times likely to be unemployed as their white counterparts. Kind of in that context, we've over the years developed this kind of workforce development program model. Kind of laid out here with a kind of sort of from start to finish, starting with recruitment and screening. And our goal being to identify and enroll Baltimore residents facing systemic inequities, whether it's, you know, residents been impacted by the criminal justice system, lack access to housing, stable housing or stable transportation, or otherwise aren't able to access a quality career. We think of our screening process as kind of being a process to ensure that everyone we select for enrollment is someone who's going to be committed to and able to be successful in a construction career. So as part of that, we have a hands-on kind of skills assessment where applicants can work with us on our construction instructor on kind of digging and other related construction tasks to really ensure that someone enrolling in the program understands the nature of the work and some of the physical requirements. But at the same time, we don't have any minimum reading or math requirements. Our goal is to make the program as open as accessible as possible for residents looking for a career in the sector. Once someone enrolls, we begin with job readiness instruction, starting with instruction provided by Ron Harvey, who's on this call as our job readiness contractor. And then we provide industry recognized credentials and hands-on instruction, which I'll talk a little bit more about later. And overall, the program length's about 9 weeks long, full-time, Monday through Friday. But we recognize that for some of our participants, 9 weeks may not be enough time to be ready for a permanent position. Could be someone who might need a little bit longer to reinstate a driver's license or accomplish another goal, obtain stable housing or something else. And so we have an optional paid on-the-job training phase kind of with some of our non-federal funding. And so if someone needs a little more time engaged in the program before beginning a permanent job, they can work with us on one of our on-the-job training teams, either doing kind of facilities-related work or energy efficiency-related work before graduation and then placement into one of the brownfields careers. And so, and then we have graduation and job placement. As part of the job placement process, we organize interviews with our employer partners for everyone is eligible within a cohort, as well as provide kind of supported job search as well to kind of tailor applications based on each individual's skills and interests. And then we provide 2 years of retention support to all of our graduates. So we have a retention specialist who regularly checks in with our graduates to ensure that they're doing well in their job. If any challenges come up, see if we can troubleshoot them with the graduate and then provide support both around making sure that they're able to renew their asbestos license every year and working on opportunities to advance in the industry. And then throughout the program, from the application stage through the retention phase, we're providing wraparound case management services. And so someone initially meets one of our case managers when they apply to develop, create an individual service plan, set their case management goals, start working on those objectives. It might be starting driver's education, working on, making sure that they're able to get to our training center every day. And then continuing into the retention period. And they know that our case managers continue to be available as a resource. So again, anything that comes up too, they will continue to provide support to our graduates. And then the job readiness phase of the program includes topics, both instruction and coaching support around building work habits that lead to long-term career success. Understanding one's kind of role within the company and the way kind of their role has impact and the ways to kind of to maximize that the positive impact, conflict resolution, resume writing, interview skills, punctuality and goal setting. And our goal with our kind of the job readiness component is that we cover all of the content in first kind of a more of a classroom setting, and then it's reinforced every single day through coaching and support by our staff members. So someone might show up a little bit late one day, one of our staff members will immediately check in, provide some coaching and support, figure out what was happening that particular day, how we can kind of help ensure someone's able to be on time throughout the rest of the program, and kind of very much think of that 9 weeks we have with someone as sort of our sort of training runway. And so by the we know that day one, someone may not be able to meet all of an employer's expectations when it comes to starting one of these positions. But we know we got to get there at the end of that 9 week period. So through all the coaching, resources, and support, we're working to make sure that when it comes to those expectations, someone feels is going to be fully set up to be prepared to be successful once they start that new job.
Eli, do you do your job readiness at the beginning of the program or towards the end?
We start with a kind of a 1 week job readiness phase to kind of set kind of our baseline expectations and kind of build kind of like common language and understanding. But then our thinking is that everything we kind of start in the first week is kind of a thread that continues on throughout the program. So we'll have kind of follow-up workshops throughout the rest of the program, and then coaching that reinforces all the lessons we cover in that first week.
Thank you.
And then here are some of the industry credentials we provide to each of our program participants. Includes the EPA Asbestos Sahara worker certification. We definitely find this, you know, most Brownfields graduates are working on asbestos jobs, and this is the kind of often kind of the, from employers, the credential that brings the most value in allowing a graduate to step foot on one of these project sites and immediately be able to start contributing on day one. We also find it can be some of the, one of the more challenging credentials. Maryland is, I think, you know, one of the states that has kind of third-party testing for the credentials. So we don't always end up at 100% pass rate on the first exam, and we offer kind of retake opportunities to our participants to try to get to 100% for the credential. And then we also know that the annual refresher and then retesting requirement in Maryland, again, done by the third-party testing agency, can be challenging as well. We make it kind of a core part of our case management retention services for our graduates, because, you know, we don't want someone to be in a position that they're successful for a year, there might be a gap in employment, their asbestos license expires, and then they're kind of locked out of the industry until they can reobtain that license. And then we offer the OSHA 30 construction safety credential, the OSHA 40 HAZWOPER credential. Within our OSHA construction, you know, we, based on employer feedback, have kind of focus areas on confined space operations, fall protection. We cover first aid, adult CPR. And then through volunteer instruction from one of our employer partners, Urban Green Environmental, we also offer instruction to ecology and brownfield and environmental site assessment training as well. And then kind of moving on to looking at some of our kind of case management services, we kind of first provide those services in the context of the systemic barriers that many of our participants and graduates face. And so that includes systemic legal barriers that disproportionately impact residents of color and then subject residents to the resulting collateral consequences of that impact. Systemic barriers around education and the lack of opportunities to enter industries like the brownfields industry. Someone just had the opportunity to obtain one of these industry required credentials. Closed recruitment networks, employer biases in hiring, and the use of non-job relevant screening proxies, like say a high school diploma requirement where that might not be required to do the work, or a criminal record restriction that might not be relevant to the position or required by employers' contracts. And so often we find that one of the benefits of the program is not just the training preparation, but the connection to employers, especially employers that may have previously had more of a closed recruitment network where they were hiring through word of mouth or referrals from existing employees. And we kind of help open up those opportunities to more residents in Baltimore. Transportation barriers, we find that, kind of, and relevant, I think, across the construction industry, how important transportation is to an individual's success. Often companies are requiring graduates to drive company vehicles, and a driver's license is very important. And then transportation as well. And especially for more project-based work, someone might have a project in Baltimore City and the next one is in outside the city. And so ensuring that our graduates have reliable transportation is a core part of our case management services. Also kind of building, kind of providing financial coaching and education and helping supporting our graduates in building savings and wealth is a core part of the program as well. Recognize that the racial wealth and income gap often denies residents of color the stability to retain employment. So if there is some sort of financial shock, a car that breaks down, a medical emergency, having that emergency savings can be really, really crucial to retaining a job. And also, recognizing that there are often kind of workplace biases as well that can impede employment retention and advancement. And so being able to have open conversations with our employer partners about those biases as they come up. And so someone, you know, we have a number of graduates having challenges with, you know, supervisors at a company where they, you know, the company might be predominantly white, might have few workers of color. Being able to kind of talk about and address those challenges in the workplace is really, really crucial for in the long-term success of our graduates. And then kind of looking at our case management services, you know, we provide benefit screening support, whether it's obtaining health insurance, SNAP or food stamps benefits, a free cell phone, legal and expungement services. All of our participants during the first week meet with a lawyer, a volunteer lawyer, who then files expungement petitions for any record someone has that can be expunged, providing support around housing stability, finding, you know, like a landlord who might, if someone's having trouble kind of qualifying for a rental unit or finding other sorts of kind of housing stability strategies and support. Driver's license attainment, one of our commitments as a program is supporting every participant who does not yet have a driver's license obtain a driver's license, either during the program or you know, during the first few months after completion. So that includes everything from driver's education support, help with kind of using a Civic Works vehicle to gain some kind of road driving practice. They can use a Civic Works vehicle for their road test with the MVA, as well as working to reinstate a license if it's been suspended or revoked, and kind of supporting you know, paying off fines or converting fines to community service by obtaining a hearing with a local judge. Vehicle purchase, car match support is another part of our program. And so we, once someone has a driver's license, we want to help them purchase a vehicle. And so we'll contribute up to $1,500 from Civic Works with a savings match of $1,000 from the program participant towards the purchase of a vehicle. We also provide a weekly living stipend to participants while they're enrolled in the program, and continue to provide these case management services for at least 2 years after job placement. And then our employer engagement model. And so, you know, recognize kind of, you know, core part of the success of our program is that our, you know, ensuring that our curriculum is aligned with the hiring needs of our employer partners. And as those hiring needs change, changing our curriculum as well to ensure that it's kind of bringing as much value as possible, and it's allowing our graduates to outcompete our other hiring channels that an employer might have. Kind of setting up kind of, you know, long-term partnerships with employers that it might include that those employers presenting to our classes, conducting on-site interviews for all the participants in a cohort. Be able to work with employers to make changes to their screening processes, so they're focusing, you know, primarily on job relevant skills, and, you know, whether or not someone has a high school diploma or not, or, you know, maybe whether or not someone, how well someone interviews across the table, you know, is not always going to be the best gauge of someone's success in the workplace. And then prioritizing employers with more inclusive hiring practices and stronger job quality standards. And so for the employers who have those more inclusive practices and employers who have, you know, better wages and better benefits, stronger support around retention and advancement, we work to prioritize those employers when setting up interviews and kind of connecting them with graduates for different hiring opportunities. You know, our goal is that we want to build partnerships with companies where we can engage in feedback and conversation around ways to strengthen practices and kind of incentivize employers to continue to strengthen their workplace practices. And then our last slide, some of our program results. It can be hard to kind of pull together cumulative numbers since we started the program in 2001, but since between 2020 and 2023, We've enrolled almost 260 program participants. 87% have completed the program. 85% have been placed or have pending job offers in one of our most recent cohorts. We have an average wage at placement of about $17.70 per hour. And of those 259 participants, we've helped 64 obtain their driver's license and 53 purchase vehicles through our program. And overall, our one-year retention rate is 78%. And that wraps up the slides I have, and happy to answer questions.
It's very impressive, Eli. Actually, if you could send me those PowerPoints, I'll put them in the notes so to share them with the group if that's possible. And is it all right if someone has additional questions, which we may address in a little bit? Is it all right if they email you?
Yep, that sounds perfect.
I had a question about recruitment. Now, you've been around a long time, so in terms of awareness of your program, I'm sure the word is getting out, is out there. Do you need to do much recruitment, or how do you approach awareness and recruitment?
It's a great question. I'd say, primary kind of recruitment channel is word of mouth. We have over 1,000 alumni of the program, and hearing about the program from a past graduate who's in the industry, that nothing can match that validation. And so that's a lot of people. Have heard about this one way or another. And then we have a lot of a number of community partners, our local one-stop career centers. We have a partnership with our kind of parole probation agents. We had a co-location agreement where a parole probation agent was on site once a week before the pandemic, and we're just being able to kind of restart that partnership this month, which we're excited about. And that both allows graduate or participants in the program to do their reporting on site without having to miss class time, and then for other individuals on that agent's caseload to learn about the program and potentially enroll. I will say the pandemic definitely disrupted a lot of our kind of other standard recruitment channels and partnerships. And so it's definitely taken a number of years to kind of rebuild kind of how we do recruitment intake as a program.
How do you screen when you have more people than you have slots? Would you say go for 25 or 20 applicants thinking some are going to drop out to get to around 15? Is that about what you do?
Yeah. Even kind of start each class with a little bit of a wait list. Ideally, when kind of everything's running smoothly within our recruitment intake. And so for enrolling a class of 20, we might accept 20, tell 5 people they're on the wait list. And generally we find that most of those 5 people will be able to take off the wait list, given, people, not showing up on the first day or, other things that come up that mean they can't participate in the program.
Anyone have any questions? I'm impressed by the amount of wraparound services and the tracking that you do. That's something that a lot of grantees talk about as an afterthought. And in your case, it isn't an afterthought. You really, once they're in the program, they're in there and you help them out. And the other thing that's impressive is you allow them to come back for refreshers. Do they have to pay for those refreshers, or is that just part of the program?
It kind of depends on the graduate situation. Like we really want to support graduates kind of building the habit of obtaining that refresher on their own. Mm-hmm. So we'll often kind of help remind them, kind of prod them to check in with their employer about obtaining the refresher. But if someone's out of work or unemployed, we'll help cover the cost of the refresher and help facilitate it.
Excellent. Any other questions? Well, I can understand why you've had 8 re-ups. The amount of leveraging and services that you get from other organizations is really impressive. And but you're also a huge organization within yourself, aren't you? This is one division. I understand you've got the youth build and you've got a lot of others, that energy. And so you're able to withdraw from all these different groups.
Yeah, that's been a benefit of the kind of the implementation, to be able to kind of, even like when it comes to like intake and recruitment or other services, being able to drop on and kind of collaborate across the organization.
Any other questions? Okay. We're going to, that was very good. Thank you very much, Eli. If there aren't any questions, we're going to just speak for a few minutes. I don't want to keep you too long, but we're going to talk a little bit about this whole idea of recruitment. And in your case, you know, recruitment kind of takes care of itself. Where it appears in the grant application, which isn't out yet, it'll be out next month. It's kind of buried within a lot of the evaluation criteria when they come out. But it's important that you know how you're going to recruit and assess, and we'll be talking about that at our next PLC. But in the application for getting a job training grant, it's buried in an area called structure and anticipated outcomes. And it's how many students you're going to be recruiting, how you're going to recruit those participants, what can participants expect from the program, how will the community benefit? In Eli's case, it's fairly clear that the community has tremendous benefits and the student does. But when you start writing your grant, you're going to find out that that's the whole idea of recruitment and screening is buried within some of the evaluation criteria. So, but it's really important that you understand how recruitment takes place. A good class will bring you a long way toward success of the program. A bad class can almost guarantee failure. And we've had so many cases where people have been so eager to fill their 20 slots that they're a little sloppy in terms of their recruitment. They haven't done the homework. They haven't done the public awareness. And as a result, they've taken people that probably should be in the program. Mostly the people aren't motivated, people who aren't ready to go to all the classes. In Eli's cases, they may not be people that are willing to take the certification tests. What that results in is dropouts, poor retention rates, and a sabotage of the entire program. Worst of all, they're taking up seats that could be taken by people who are really deserving. So this whole area of recruitment is as important as anything you're going to be doing. It's interesting about this program. People think that the technology training is the centerpiece of this program, but as Eli just described, there's so much more to these programs than just teaching remediation technology. There's so much in terms of the pre-planning, getting the right people into the program, the right deserving people, and having this motivated class. So we're going to talk just for a few minutes about recruitment today. Recruitment really goes hand in hand with community awareness. If the community is aware of your program, as Eli said, they've had 1,000 graduates. They're well entrenched in the neighborhood. People are aware of them. The WIB is aware of them. They know the program. They know what they provide. If you're a newer grantee or you're a brand new grantee, this becomes much more challenging. So part of your recruitment strategy has to incorporate a community awareness strategy, whether some people would call it marketing your program. I would call it building a foundation for recruitment. And that's really community awareness. And what do? You have to explain this. And it's not just when you start actually bringing bodies into the program. It actually begins right now when you're developing your program. It ties in to your community need, which we did a session on in the last PLC. Community need, which includes labor market assessment and community assessment. And if you're doing those properly, you're going to get to know the community and who's in that community. And you're also going to get to know the employers and who they are and what they do and what they need. That's why we spend a lot of time early on in the PLCs talking about community assessment, labor market assessment. And really, if you're doing your community assessment right, you're really doing your community awareness, because what do you do in community assessments? You're going into city council and you're going to explain your program. You're going into religious organizations, town hall meetings, local meetings. You're going to identify influencers in the neighborhood, and you're going to educate those people of what you're planning on bringing into the neighborhood. And if you're a new grantee, it doesn't matter whether you're an old grantee or a new grantee experience, because you always caveat it with the fact that you're applying for this grant that's coming up. And if you get it, this is what it's going to mean to the community. And the first question that everyone's going to ask is going to say, well, what am I being trained for? What is this environmental technician? What is this thing that you're bringing to our community? And it's here's where it gets very specific, because you're not really training environmental technician because it's such a broad category. You're creating an elite group of graduates that are going to have specific skills. And as Eli mentioned, these skills go way beyond certain courses that they're taking. It's going to include financial literacy. It's going to include anger management. It's going to working with people. But it is also going to provide certain skills training, whether it's asbestos. It's going to certainly include a HAZWOP, confined space, first aid. So you're going to have to, when you're talking awareness to the community, what you're going to bring to this community, you're going to have to know a little bit about what kind of curriculum, which we'll talk about at a different time, what courses you're going to be teaching, what skills and knowledges and attributes are your graduates going to have? What are your graduates going to look like when they graduate your program? And this is what this community awareness and recruitment, we're almost talking about the same thing. Community awareness, you're saying the same things, but you're saying it to the community, to the influencers, because if they're going to suggest that you should apply to this program, we think is really good, they're going to have to know, what is the program and what are you going to look like when you get out, when you're a graduate? They're going to have to know, are there really jobs available? Where are these jobs going to be? How much are they going to pay? Where are they? Can I get into them? Is there going to be employment discrimination? That is questions that the people who are going to be promoting your program, which is a precursor of recruitment or part of recruitment, they're going to have to know, because word of mouth is one of the strongest recruitment strategies there is. And those people who are going to be imparting the attribute to your program are going to have to know these things. So you have to get out up in front. What are the benefits of these programs? What is BJT? Do these jobs actually lead to a career, or is it going to be a one-shot deal? Is it sustainable employment? Is it going to be something that I'm willing to put 8 weeks or 10 weeks with or without stipends or without pay? I'm going to be doing a lot of sacrificing. Is it worth it? So you want to get into the whole community awareness. And we haven't even talked about specific recruitment yet. We've just been talking about, what are you saying to the community? And these are the overall questions that you've got to get out in the neighborhood. The word has to get out. There's either a program coming into town, they're applying for a grant, and this is going to be good for everybody. And this is why, and this is what they're going to look like when they get out. Then when you get into the actual recruitment itself, now you've got a lot of people coming into the program. And I'm going to just briefly talk about it, and we'll bring it up at the next PLC. But you're going to have to now get serious about people saying, I heard in the neighborhood that this is a program I want to go to. But again, you're going to have to re-educate the people that are coming to your orientations. And every program should have orientation. And here you get down to the nitty-gritty, and you're going to have to walk through everything in that program. You want to have complete visibility of that program, what they're going to look like once they're accepted, how to apply, what your high standards are going to be, what's going to happen when you get in the program, and how hard it's going to be for them to graduate, and what they can expect when they graduate. So you've got to do this somehow. And many of our best grantees have one or two orientations followed by one-on-one interviews. But it is very clear that that gentleman or lady who is going to be sitting in front of you does not want to have any surprises. You've got to make it very clear what to expect. And of course, you know, the obvious things are they have to be a permanent resident above 18 years of age at graduation. But they have to know what the process is going to be. Are they going to have to take some aptitude tests in civics works situation? That isn't a key thing. Other people have TABE or work keys, and they run everything through that type of screen. Some, and they vary all over the place. But that selection process has to be brought up front, and what's going to be done when they interview, and once they apply, how many forms are they going to have to fill out? What can they expect in terms of costs? Am I going to have to put something out? Am I going to have to pay for these courses? You're going to have to explain there's no fee for the certifications, but perhaps we do third-party certifications, and you're going to have to go to a certification board, and you're going to have to pass these tests. You're going to have to attend every class to graduate. If you can't, or if there's some whether it's a court date or something, we'll work around it. We'll work with you. But you have to have the full curriculum. You need to have all the certifications, because the graduate service program are basically elite, and we're selling graduates with specific skills, not people who took one or two courses and sat in a seat for 6 or 8 weeks. You're going to have to also talk to them about the dates and the formats of the training. Are these going to be day, evening? Are they going to have to come in on Saturdays? Is it going to be extra time? Are you going to have field trips? So what we're basically saying is you have to lay out the entire program to those recruits. And again, a very good way to do this is through orientations. Some of our grantees will have an initial orientation, and they'll have, particularly in urban areas, they'll have many people attend. Then they'll say, well, now that we did the first one, we're going to have a second one. And they may even make it difficult to go to these orientations. They may be early in the morning purposely. Because if someone doesn't have the motivation to get up for an 8 o'clock orientation, are they going to have the motivation to get through all your classwork? So they're funneling their students. They're making it a little difficult. Others will not only have one or two orientations, they'll have tryouts. OAI, for example, does tryouts, and they'll do exercises that require teamwork, where you get an idea of whether people could work together as a team, or anger issues something you should be concerned with. So you're basically doing this as part of the screening process, and we'll be talking about that. And I think others will probably continue with this whole idea of methodology of recruitment, screening and assessment in the next PLC. But before we end it, does anyone have some questions or would like to comment on what you're doing in terms of screening and that whole recruitment process? It is just so important, because if you're doing good recruitment, you're going to have a good team. It's almost like picking a baseball team or a little league team. If you have really good motivated people, you're going to have a good season. If you blew it and you had a bad time, it's going to be torture for the next 6 weeks and through graduation and post-graduation. So this is every time we come on with these critical issues, we say this is the most important thing. This is really one of those most important things. The other, whether it's community need, labor market assessments, or community assessments, awareness, when it gets down to it, your recruitment and your placement are the key issues of this entire program. What happens in between are things that you may have some control about, but once these things are set, your program is pretty much set for success. So any comments that anyone would like to make? Anything? Steve, are you holding up your hand or your fist?
Oh, no. I was just stretching.
Oh, okay.
I think he was saying right on.
Well, I'm glad it was a fist and not something else. All right. Thank
you. Thumbs up.
Well, thanks, everybody. We're all looking forward to the all grantee meeting. And after that, we've got this spring break, and we'll see you in June.
June 7th.
Okay.
So I think we can turn the recording off.
We can do that.